Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to The Naturalist Capitalist. This is your host, Reed Coverdale. And for episode 102, Brian Nichols joins me to talk about selling liberty, liberty unity, and a few other subjects that make it into the conversation. I hope you enjoy this episode. And without further ado, here is episode 102 with Brian Nichols. Hello, guys. Thank you for watching. This is episode 102, and today I've got Brian Nichols on the show with me. How's it going today, Brian?
Going good. Reed, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well. I've been looking forward to having you on. Full disclosure, I had no idea who you were before I had Twitter, but I've been following you for a while now, and I like a lot of what you have to say. We've been in a lot of the same circles, a lot of the same conversations. But for the audience who doesn't know who you are, just give us a little intro on yourself, what it is you've been doing, and what gets you out of bed in the morning. What are you excited about in the Liberty Movement?
For sure. Well, so my name is Brian Nichols. I am the host of the aptly named Brian Nichols Show. And really, the main goal of my show when I started about 3.5 years ago was to enter into conversations about the issues that people cared about. And my main objective for my program is to leave my audience feeling educated, enlightened, and informed. And about 3.5 years of doing that, my show has also taken on this role of being really focused on how do we create value. My day job, I'm a sales executive in the greater telecommunications and cybersecurity industry. So this is my day job. I live the life of sales. And one thing that was very obvious from my entering into the greater Liberty Movement back around 3.5 years ago was that, yes, we need some professionalism in terms of actually approaching sales, because right now we really haven't had much of a strong sales arm. We've been very, very focused on the philosophy and the ideology, which is great. But when it comes to actually communicating that to real people, reaching them where they're at, we have woefully dropped the ball. So what gets me out of bed in the morning is figuring out ways that we can take these sometimes very difficult to understand ideas and break them down in simple, easy to understand ways that your average person will say, oh, tell me more. I want to learn more. And that's where I think we're going to find the most success versus just being the angry people telling people what they need to be concerned about and how important our ideas are.
Yeah, it's interesting. Libertarians, once they become libertarians, they kind of become obsessed with theory and debate and just talking about these ideas. And you forget that the way you became a libertarian was probably through one or two issues that the libertarians really agreed with you on. And you were like, whoa, okay, that idea is interesting. And I want to hear more about it. And I want to hear about the rest of the platform. They didn't bring you Anatomy of the State and throw it in front of you and say, read that and you'll be a libertarian in no time, Sonny. You know, it's what we had in common already that made you interested in the first place, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is back to my day job, right? So we present case studies. Every single organization is going to have case studies of whatever their product was and some example of how it worked well. But those case studies can be multiple pages long, and your average person, if they get that in their inbox, it's going to go right to the trash folder because it's just too much. But if you're able to break down the value, whatever it is that that case study brought forward, whatever problem it is that it helps solve, well, then if you can make it so that's easy to understand in, you know, one or two sentences and gets the person to say, oh, okay, I want to learn more about that. Can you tell me more? That's where that teacher role takes kind of over. And this is, I don't like to pick on Dr. Jorgensen because I think she's a fantastic lady, very intelligent lady. And honestly, she's probably one of the most libertarian candidates that we've had in quite a while. But that doesn't mean that you're an effective communicator of libertarian ideas. You have to have the ideas mattering to people based on the issues that are currently facing them in their own lives. Enter the conversation that people are already having versus telling them the conversation that they should be having.
Yeah, I mean, I think Spike Cohen illustrates that a lot better than Joe Jorgensen, because Joe Jorgensen was great for someone like me, who is already a libertarian, who wants to hear a lecture on libertarianism, but
it makes you feel pretty.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but if you're someone who's not a libertarian, if you, instead of having a crowd in front of you and trying to convert them all into being great libertarians, the goal should be, okay, what are three issues that I can really hit home with them? Like, whether it's healthcare or the lockdowns or gun rights or the wars or whatever it is. And I watched the episode you did with David Feit, and he made a very good point that he and I both operated outside of the party for a little while on Tulsi Gabbard's campaign. And that was something that she was very good at. She would reach out to people from across a wide spectrum on a few really important issues and connect with them. And then people would be like, okay, I can, you know, I want to know more about this. We really suck at that. Like, we're really not good at that historically. We're trying. In fact, it's not that we're not just trying to turn people into libertarians. It's almost as if they don't turn into complete libertarians right away. We kind of say, whoa, 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 you know, we don't really want you in here because you have this weird view on healthcare or border security or whatever it is. And we try to, you know, make our little tiny pond of ideological libertarians. And that's not an effective way to grow your group, grow your message, grow your movement.
Well, and you started to touch on it. You know, we say the people out there who have these weird ideas, actually, we're kind of the ones with the weird ideas. And when we're talking about in sales, we talk about our biggest competitor. It's not, you know, your other competition out there. It's actually the status quo. People don't like change. And when they look at who we are nothing but change. Now, the change isn't the progressive change. It's not increasing the size of government, but still, it's a big change from where they are to where they're going to be. So part of our challenge is helping fill what we like to call in sales the reality gap. So where they are right now to how we get them to the next step, and showing that that solution that we're offering is actually going to be solving the problems that they're seeing right there before them. So until we're able to do that, I mean, we're just basically going to be the guy standing on the corner just screaming at people. And that's not a successful means to establish long-lasting trust or to ask more and more questions. That's just going to get people to just turn you off, to hit the mute button.
Yeah. Yeah, so I want to talk a little bit about how you ended up here, because it's sort of similar to me. I don't know too many people who were also brought into the Liberty Movement by Rand Paul, but that's kind of your... that's kind of your story too. So why don't you just tell us how that happened?
Yeah, I was Mr. GOP through and through. I mean, GOP household, and I was in college, you know, GOP club president. And it was one of those things where I was like, well, this just seems like that's the natural progression for where my politics should go. And then I found in 2012, I should have been paying more attention to Ron Paul. And sadly I wasn't. But after the 2012 election, I started just to feel that something wasn't right with the GOP. The things that I was told, the things that we had saw as the real groundswell of the 2010 Tea Party wave, that kind of started to fade away. Now, there were some really great candidates that came from that 2010 Tea Party wave. You had folks like Justin Amash, Thomas Massey, Rand Paul, Mike Lee. And those folks have been doing a great job in standing and advocating for liberty. And one of them, as you mentioned, was Rand Paul. And it's funny, I didn't really put two and two together for whatever reason that Rand Paul was Ron Paul's son. I don't know why I didn't. But the real first thing that caught me was Rand Paul talking about Obama possibly using drones to go after U.S. citizens. And I'm like, that seems like that should be a red flag that we should be a little bit more concerned about, eh? And it wasn't really being talked about. So I started to do more research into Rand, and inevitably led to a bunch of YouTube videos about his father, which led to every single libertarian YouTube rabbit hole that there's out there. And I found myself, you know, hours turning into days, turning into weeks of figuring out that this entire world that was out there pretty much identified everything that I believed. It was something that at the point, I think I was calling it New Age Republicanism. I was like, fiscal responsibility and social acceptance. And I'm like, that's literally don't hurt people and don't take their stuff pretty much, which at the very end of the day is the very underlying principles of what it means to be a libertarian. So as I started to pay more attention to Rand, and then we started getting closer to the 2015 primaries, and then I said, oh my gosh, this is a great opportunity to get this, this new idea to a more national stage. And I was kind of playing catch up in terms of not realizing how little libertarians had in terms of traction in the GOP from getting a real presidential candidate to be a threat to the original, you know, establishments out there, the Bushes, the, you know, the Rubios of the world. So that was kind of the big slap in the face of, oh, maybe the GOP is not the best means for this national platform for liberty. And I started to look at the Libertarian Party. And I think, you know, this is where Dave Smith's been absolutely, you know, knocking it out of the park, is that the Libertarian Party, while I don't think it's the only way to advance liberty, it is a massive tool in the toolbox that's at our disposal. It's the third largest political party. If we're not using that as a means to try and enact liberty policy, then what are we doing? I made it a focus on my show to do Sunday candidate series where I'm interviewing folks who are running across the United States, but also recently candidates who have won their elections. Trisha Butler, I just had her on the show. She's down in Clarksville, Tennessee, a council member down in Ward 12, talking about the wins, you know, the victories that we're getting now as libertarians into office. And this is where I think we're going to find, and this is might be the missing piece. People are looking for someone, and in this case, it's politicians, for better or for worse, that are going to be people they can trust. And they don't trust libertarians yet because we don't have anything of value besides just feel-good ideas, which we know are right, that people right. can say, this is going to make my life better right now. So once we're able to start getting more and more local candidates elected who can now get liberty policy into action and start making substantive, objective, like empirical data changes in people's lives for the better right now, that's when we can start to say, oh, by the way, that was a libertarian position. And hey, maybe you should look more into this versus the mainstream media or the corporate media's personification or characterization of who we are as libertarians. We need to stop playing defense, get on the offense. And I think the best way to get an offense is to start getting some real policy into action.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's I just wanted to comment that it's kind of funny. The filibuster of John Brennan's nomination is also what caught my attention about Rand Paul in 2014. So, I mean, that's a very – and then I, after finding out about him, I went back and watched Ron Paul's videos because I, just like you, I knew who he was.
Same thing, yeah.
That's really funny. That's very similar. But, yeah, you're totally right about you know, I was talking about this on Part of the Problem. It's theory versus reality. So one of the great things I can do in my show is when I have something really stupid that I run into day to day at work, I can say, wow, hey, guys, check this out. Like, this is the government for you, you know, making my life easier. And I can really bring it down to the real world, you know, and say, hey, the government is actually obstructing things from working well here. It's actually making it harder. It's actually making it more expensive. All this talk about how we need the government to do more to make our lives easier. They're already doing plenty, believe me. Right. So I think you're right that our ideas do win when they're in action, but we're so theoretical and we're so caught up in philosophy that we get in our own way almost. Like we don't, it's almost like we don't even want to try because we're afraid that it's not going to be as perfect as we think it's going to be or something. I don't really know what it is, but there's like this allergy to action from libertarians that kept me away from the Libertarian Party for a long time because I did vote for Gary Johnson. But after that election, I was like, OK, these guys aren't serious. And I kind of kept my eye on the party the last few years and just, you know, I liked Larry Sharp. There are a couple guys who were doing stuff that was cool. But for the most part, it didn't seem like a vessel for doing anything. And then things were so bad in 2020 that I was like, okay, I don't care. I have to get involved with this because we're in deep trouble. And really since the election, like the last several months, I've really seen a change. Like people actually want to do stuff in the Libertarian Party now. They actually want to win. They actually want to make changes. Have you seen that too? Has it been a very recent phenomenon? Was I too judgmental from the outside, or is this actually like a new development that's happening finally?
I don't want to say it's a new development, Reed, necessarily, but it's definitely been one that has started to really snowball for the better. Before it used to be, maybe you'd have one, two, if you were lucky, three elections nationally that were like actually in play. And we would get some elected officials across the board here and there. But otherwise, it was more of just trying to maintain ballot access. Now, Gary Johnson and Bill Weld, those were votes. That wasn't, you know, anything from actually getting people into office to get policy implemented. there seems to have been definitely a shift. And I would say in the past 2 years, focusing more on this local approach, getting liberty activists. And this is one thing, too. It's not just through the Libertarian Party, but also through the other two major parties. And I've been focusing more on the GOP because that's from where I came from. And I speak the language more fluently. So I can have these conversations with more GOP leaning folks, but find those areas of common ground for liberty wins that we can not just focus on, but then build more coalitions with folks outside of our traditional liberty movements. And I think right there, that's maybe where we've seen this little fish, little pond mentality start to get, you know, more prevalent, is because as we're bringing in more people who overtly are not libertarian, just because they're new to the movement or they're learning the movement, that's making a lot of people uncomfortable. And we're building coalitions with people that we traditionally wouldn't consider, you know, building coalitions with. I mean, right now we see a strong ally in the GOP in getting school choice enacted. That is something that we should not be pretending is not a positive thing for liberty. Like, school choice could easily be one of the biggest wins to helping change our educational system for the better. And that's a thing we can work on right now objectively with Republicans as a good thing. What we just saw as we're recording today with the Chauvin trial, finding him guilty, like, criminal justice reform is an open area for Democrats to have a conversation with us. Now, it doesn't have to go down to a conversation about abolishing the police, but you're entering into a conversation with somebody who is going to be more open to your ideas if you're entering into the conversation that they're already having a conversation about. And that's, I think, maybe where we've missed too much, is that libertarians in this small pond, they have their core issues that are like the big issues to them, and they don't understand why everybody else out there doesn't also think that those issues matter to them as much as it matters to them. And they want them to pay attention to the issues as much as they do. And if you don't, well, then there must be something wrong with you. And that's where we see these names get tossed out: racist, homophobe, sexist, transphobe, go down the list. And it's so annoying, because this is not how we're going to be able to advance liberty. Going after each other because we're not focusing on the number one or number two issues for each of us that it means to be a libertarian, that's not how we're going to be able to change the future, change real people's minds outside of our movement. Talk to real people. I mean, one of the quotes that Trisha just had in the program was, we need to make libertarians human. Like, make us not these freaking robots or these things. You're scrolling through Facebook and you see a 13-page text thread, and it's the libertarian talking about the non-aggression principle. Do you think your average person knows what the non-aggression principle is? They probably don't even know, like, how to begin to talk about these ideas like we do. But we enter into conversations on level 1000 libertarian when they're at level one. And that's on us. We need to be changing the way we approach those conversations. Otherwise, we're just going to keep on doing the same thing over again, expecting a different result.
Yeah, I could not agree more with that. I also think what's interesting is that trying to build coalitions with people that you might agree with a couple issues on is somehow looked at as treason, you know? And so libertarians are typically fine, like, oh, if you want to work with Mike Lee, or if you want to work with Tulsi Gabbard, like, those people are okay. But I'm like, no, I mean, if Liz Cheney has something that I have in common with her, I don't care. Like, I don't like her at all. I hate her, but I'll work with her on that one issue. Or, you know, AOC, if I want to work with her on decriminalization of drugs or something. Like, people tend to make it about the person who wrote the bill or the party who's pushing it, where I really don't care. I mean, I don't even care about the Libertarian Party as a thing. I just look at it as a vehicle for liberty. Yep. So whatever vehicle carries liberty, I don't, you know, that could be one of Liz Cheney's bills, God forbid, you know, it could be like something about taxes or something. I don't know. Like, okay, fine. Like, if that is a channel for liberty, let's take it. But we're so allergic to touching anything that's not in our little circle. It's just unclean. And I mean, that's not how you get anything done.
Right. I get it, though. I mean, I get it, because our idea, like, our political party, the Libertarian Party, if we were looking at that as that, is not just a political party. It's actually based on a philosophy. And that's where it gets tough, because people want, and I say people in general, the libertarians want the Libertarian Party to, by and large, also be a means of advancing the ideology. But that's not the role of the party. And I think that's where we need to rip the bandaid off and call it for what it is. The Libertarian Party is not a think tank. And it's not, that's not its goal right now. The Libertarian Party's goal is to win elections to enact libertarian policy. Let me say it again. The Libertarian Party's goddamn job is to help enact libertarian pro-liberty policy. And if we can do that from a local perspective first and then state perspectives, or if we can do those in a combination of the two, that's where we're going to have the most success. But think tank world is not real life world. Think tank world's great to help like do these like thought experiments of how policy can work, but that only gets you so far. Until we can actually get this stuff into action, impacting real people's lives, it's all pie in the sky stuff. And people out there, they don't care. They want to say, how can you help me now? That's what we need to be able to answer.
So where's the trade-off for success versus perfection? So if we could get Mike Lee and AOC to run as the Libertarian president and vice presidential nominees, and they could win, and they could end the wars, and they could end the drug war, and that's pretty much all they'd agree on, but they could get those two things done, would it be worth running them, or are you sacrificing too much of your principles? Like,
And that's a tough one, right? And I think it would require us to kind of figure out, and it would have to be from a mission standpoint, and you see this in any organization, what are your top objectives for the year, right? So if the top objective is to end the wars, and that could be the wars overseas and the wars on drugs, then that would be a means of accomplishing that goal. But that also does open the door for possible externalities that you have to be aware of. And that's why it's important to have those coalitions really working hand in hand and collaborating and being in constant contact versus this constantly more and more tunnel vision, siloed approach to politics, where we'll have these certain issues that will just by chance mesh up in terms of policy agreements. But I think if we were to, instead of focusing on those one or two issues and start having more conversations, we will discover that despite those folks out there who are the bad actors, that there are more folks out there than not who are genuinely good people who are looking to just figure out some path in life. I think as people grow up, they realize that the adults that they look to as the folks who they thought knew what was going on, they realize they don't know what's going on. And oh my God, that's kind of scary. So instead of putting all the adults who don't know what's going on in charge of the entire freaking world and having all the nukes, wouldn't it make more sense to have that decentralized? I'm not terrified of Walmart every single time I leave my house because the CEO of Walmart might decide to have a bad day and hit a bad button. But we think about that if Joe Biden, you know, hits the button because he thought it was the remote control for the television. Like, that's the society and that's the world that we're currently living in right now. And I think we can objectively say that it could be so much better if we were to change the system. But that would require us to start having conversations with people outside of our circles. Because right now we're like, what, 1-2% of self-identified Americans? There's a lot of other people out there who like are overtly libertarian. They just don't identify openly as such, or they don't really know what it means to be a libertarian. They just live this like, don't mess with me, I won't mess with you kind of life. And that's the people we should be reaching out to. That's our target market. And we've been completely neglecting them, focusing on people who we think should be our target market, but maybe share like 20% or 30% of our values.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I've been kind of the figurehead for this libertarian unity thing. And Dave's picked it up. So he's a better figurehead than I am because he has a bigger audience. But, this idea of unity doesn't mean we're all exactly the same or that we're all going to agree on everything.
Right.
In fact, that's what makes us so special, is that we're not going to agree on everything and that we can reach different groups of people. So, I'm better at reaching kind of the politically homeless, like anarchist type of people. Dave's better at reaching like the right wing type of people. Spike's typically better with more left wing type of people, or people like me, who are kind of politically homeless, or like we all have our own target group that our messaging works for. And it's not going to work for every single messaging group. It's just at the end of the day, to realize, despite our differences, you know, we have much more in common than we don't, and realize that we are not each other's enemies, even though we have different ideas, especially when you bring it to government policy. Yes. That's what's so funny to me is, like, government policy, we usually agree on almost like 99% of the issues. It's just cultural things or societal things or personal habits that we disagree on. That has really been the push to try to get people to see the big picture. But that also doesn't mean to shut up about the small stuff, like still advocate your ideas. You know, I talk about things that are still controversial. Everybody should. It's just, don't make your libertarian friend who doesn't care about your number one issue to the same extent you do, don't make him your enemy. Realize that you're still on the same team at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And also, I mean, and this goes to what we're promoting as the product, right? I use this analogy over on a friend of the show, Mark Claire's program. We were talking about how when you go to Walmart, right, and you're looking, you're thirsty, and you're at that, you know, the back area next to the AutoZone part of the store, and there's, like, you know, you're right next to the bathroom, so it smells like urinal cakes, and you're like, oh, there's only one soda machine, and what is it? RC Cola, right? You're gonna have the RC Cola because you're super thirsty, but is it what you really want? No, but guess what? If you go onto Facebook and you look up right now RC Cola fan groups, there are groups out there with tens of thousands of people who are diehard RC Cola fans. Now, there's a reason that RC Cola isn't the most sold cola out there, probably because it's not the best tasting. But to those people that it tastes the best, they truly believe it. But if they were to tell Coca-Cola and Pepsi fans that they were wrong for thinking that their sodas were the best and that RC Cola's wasn't, do you think it's going to change any minds? No, but that's where, like, having, like, the blind taste test and getting people to start questioning their own preconceived notions, that's where we start to change some more minds. But you go into that by having an actual open faith conversation and actually having a dialogue and asking questions, listening. And that's where maybe we fail way too often. We have a lot to say, right? Like, libertarians, we know so much, and we want people to know about this awesome new idea that a lot of us had stumbled across over the past 5, 10, 15, 20 years, because it probably changed our life and we want to change other people's lives. But remember, where you're meeting somebody in their current state, you might be catching them quite literally on the worst day of their life. And if you're trying to force feed liberty down their throat, they're just going to shut off. So instead of focusing on just, you know, telling them what they need to know, ask them what is their problem, what do they need help with, and then try to craft a solution that is a liberty-based solution. Now, don't beat them over the head with it. And if they say, not right now, that's okay. But now you've planted that seed. And that seed will take some time to grow, but it will still be there. I have a buddy of mine, and on the political compass, you know, he and I, we were pretty much like mirrored images of each other. I'm in the bottom right quadrant, and he was in the bottom left quadrant. And I said, listen, man, as time goes on, you get more comfortable with economics. I'm pretty confident in saying you're just going to start to glide more and more to the right. And he's been taking this test now for like every year for the past 3.5 years. And he's right on like the dividing line now. And that's not through me force feeding, you know, articles from AIER or Mises or Fee down his throat. Right. It's through me having conversations with him, identifying problems that he's seeing out there, and him realizing himself more often than not that the problems he's identifying are caused by government, and the solutions that are often being presented have caused more problems than they're actually fixing. And I don't have to tell him that. He's realizing it for himself. But he wouldn't be open to even considering these different ideas were it not for me engaging in a conversation to get him thinking about it by asking the questions that are getting kind of his wheels turning on his own. And that's where we need to start getting better, is asking better questions that are going to get people to start asking more questions in response to get us, again, to tell them more.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. 4 years ago, when I voted libertarian for the first time, I was definitely not a libertarian. You know, I was anti-war. I cared about civil liberties, and I've never been a socialist. So I was, you know, mostly capitalist in the way I thought or whatever. And I cared about the deficit, and that was really about it. I'm very different now than I was 4 years ago. And people didn't try to push me out. You know, people answered my questions. They'd have conversations with me. And like you said, they weren't jamming those ideas down my throat. I have naturally ended up where I am, pretty much all the way in the bottom right-hand corner of the political spectrum. And it's just been the most honest convictions happen unintentionally. You don't want to become an anarchist, you know, it sort of happens to you after a long enough time. Like, you start realizing that, wow, all this government stuff, you know, with the small stuff where I thought it got in the way, it really did. But now I'm realizing it does with the big stuff too. And, you know, whether or not you end up actually becoming an anarchist or a libertarian, I do think that when people are honestly looking at their lives and looking at the situations they're in, that is where they're going to slowly end up. And it's really just about introducing that idea to them and getting them to look at things in a different way. You know, trying to explain, because they know something's wrong. They know things yes. aren't working. They know things are not smooth, but they don't know why. And so if you can just show them a few of those major things that are ruining their lives, then it'll start to make sense. And instead of like insisting that they see it your way through your lens, try to look at it through their lens and see what in their life is messed up, what is being slowed down in their day-to-day struggle. And then you can actually make it important to them.
Yep. Bingo. And that's something that we need to pay more attention to, but also realize that we don't need to make it as difficult as we think it is. So I found in life that the two things that usually are the hardest, and that's trying to learn something new or to think about a new solution to a problem or a new product you're going to buy, is feeling that you have to like be consciously doing it. I've always found that I learn the best, or I'm being sold to the best, and I don't even realize it's happening. And that's where we need to get really good. There is a reason that the Democratic Party has played so well their hand in getting buddy-buddy with Hollywood, because Hollywood is the storytelling machine, and the best sales out there are through being told in stories. So if we're able to effectively communicate ideas more through stories, we're just going to start to permeate more through people's like their you know, lizard brain. And that's something that we aren't doing. And if we can start, and yes, there are some folks out there who are doing a great job. I mean, goodness, Matt Kibbe over at Free the People, that's been his entire organization's goal, is helping, you know, best effectively tell stories. That's something that we can do more effectively. But also from a sales perspective, you hit the nail on the head there, Reed, is that if we're able to, instead of like coming across as like this force feeding, you know, take the sale, just do this one time transaction, like if we can just, you know, set the task, say, hey, you know, I'll give you a call in 3 months, and keep on checking on those problems, and start, you know, in the meantime, giving them the literature, giving them the value adds, still engaging and staying top of mind. That's important. And we're not doing that. We're like, we talk about these ideas all day long of how great they are. And why aren't people just jumping on board? We know how great they are. Why don't they see it? There you go. That's the problem, because we that's the mindset we have. It's not on them to just see it. It's on us to help them see it. And we haven't been doing that effectively.
Right. Yeah. I mean, any good teacher will try to meet a student on his own ground, you know, like any good teacher realizes that nothing can be taught. It can only be learned.
Yes.
And libertarians need to understand that too, for sure. Yeah. So it seems to me like people think that we need either a radical message or a pragmatic message. To me, those two aren't contradictory. It's
right.
I think when they're saying pragmatic, they mean moderate. They don't want a moderate message. So you don't want a message where you're watering down what you believe, literally changing what you say you believe to appeal to other people. That's what moderation is. Where pragmatism, you can still be radical and pragmatic, especially if you're smart about which issues are important at a given time.
Yes.
So if you were running on gun rights as a libertarian in 2004, that wasn't a smart move, because no. George Bush was president. He had just let the assault weapons ban expire, you know, and So, like, okay, why run on gun rights? That doesn't really make any sense. Maybe the war on terror and change wars and the Patriot Act, maybe things like that are a little bit more important to stress. And you, that doesn't mean you don't talk about gun rights. You can still talk about gun rights. You can still talk about where George Bush might not have been great on them, but don't make that your number one issue. Don't, you know, don't suck all the oxygen out of the room just to talk about guns. So nowadays, you know, those things would be like corporate bailouts, lockdowns, surveillance. You know, that's starting to trickle into our medical field and getting a little scary with Orwellian ideas coming out. You know, so be smart about what is happening around you and what you're going to platform as your number one, number two, number three issue. And they might, you know, they'll change from, they'll change locationally, like what's going on in New York might not be the same as Wyoming. But in general, you want to appeal to the public by showing them what's important to you. And if you have issues that are already important to you, that are important to them too, you're not watering down your message or lying to really push on those things. You know, and some people feel like if you, if even if you're explaining to other people why something's important, they feel like you're already watering down the message because you're not just up there screaming "end the Fed" at the top of your lungs. It's like, well, you know, that's just part of the game. You've got to explain to people why ending
the Fed, yes,
is going to change their lives. I mean, there's just this weird disconnect that I've been trying to sew back together and say, guys, there is no disconnect here. You can do both, like pragmatism and radicalism go together. They're smart matches.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it too is the changing of words and what the words used to mean. So pragmatic to us, right? I mean, pragmatic means pragmatic, like being tactful, being smart in how you're using your words. Whereas to your point, it's changed more to be squishy and moderate. And honestly, it's kind of Gary's fault. I mean, saying that a libertarian is someone who's socially liberal and fiscally conservative, no, that's not what it means. And that was changing the terms of what it means to be a libertarian. And that was moderating our position, not being pragmatic and being able to effectively communicate our ideas. Now, a better answer would have been a libertarian is someone who believes in not hurting someone and not taking their stuff. That is a pragmatic approach to delivering a libertarian message to an audience who maybe doesn't know what it means to be a libertarian. And it's something that's easy to understand while sticking true to our principles. You don't have to go through and start talking about the non-aggression principle in property rights. Yes, that's what we can talk about, is what it means to be a libertarian to us, right? Because that's our language. But to a person who's brand new to liberty, that's not their language. That would just be complete white noise to them. So why would we even start the conversation at that level? Let's break it down to the most easy to understand way so they can take it away and say, okay. And now when a friend of mine says, who's this person running? The third party candidate, Joe who? Oh, Joe Jorgensen. She's a libertarian candidate. They believe in don't hurting people and don't taking their stuff. Terrible English, right? But that is when we start to change people's minds from a marketing perspective, because then our messages become easier to resonate on their own. We make it harder for ourselves when our ideas are like 13 pages long in order to be able to be communicated. That's not a way to get anybody to you know, sit down and pay more attention. It goes back to the case study example, right? So if we can make these ideas easy to understand and make it so it's easy to communicate, that will also just help us naturally from a marketing perspective, because then people will be more apt to be able to share ideas. Because, and here's the other part too. People aren't willing to really engage and share unless they're willing to, or they feel comfortable to be able to explain and defend that is what they are sharing. So if we're making our messages super difficult for people to like effectively share, and then when somebody asks them, can you tell me what that means? And they're like, I don't know. That's a big red flag. And that's where we need to also get better as well.
Yeah, I was on the safety committee where I used to work, and the safety officer would put these, they were called toolbox talks. They were just safety briefings we were supposed to have at the beginning of each week, and every crew was supposed to read them. And to him, he'd feel great if he wrote something that was like 6 pages long and it had all this literature crammed in there. And I was like, Bob, two paragraphs tops,
right?
Or no one's going to read it. Like they're not going to, and they're not going to be interested.
And what if it's important? Like, what if it's like a really important safety thing that people need to pay attention to? I mean, it's almost like Boy Who Cried Wolf. It's just Boy Who Presented 13 Case Studies. Like, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Something you touched on earlier that I wanted to get into was how we're bringing people into the party, and there's a lot of, people who are claiming that this is entryism, like trying to bring people in to change what the message is and overtake the Libertarian Party. And all these accusations are coming from people who really aren't doing anything. I'm just, you know, from my perspective, and I've been watching for a while, most of these people don't do much. You know, they don't have much of a following. They're not really that impressive, and they're upset at people who kind of are impressive and are changing minds and they are bringing people in. I think it's mostly just petty jealousy. Do you think that's what it is?
Basically? Oh, 1,000%. It's little fish in little pond and getting afraid that those positions that mean so much to them are all of a sudden going to be taken away. You know, here, oh my God, this is the perfect example. And I've used this example, Little Fish in Little Pond, but all of a sudden it just hit me. So I'm a huge fan of The Office, one of my favorite TV shows ever. And yep, when Charles Minor comes in as the new boss, and Jim wore his tux to the office that day to play a prank on Dwight. And Jim realizes that Charles is there for the first time ever. And Charles is like a VP of the organization. And he's like, Michael, I thought you should have let me know that he was going to be here today. And Michael's like, what are you talking about? You look like $1 million, man. You're fine. So then Jim's like, oh, I go talk to Charles and kind of like explain why I'm wearing a tux. So he's like, you know, hey, Charles, you know, I usually don't wear a tux, but you know, one of our sales guys, Dwight, he was, you know, driving me a little crazy. And he sent this memo how he had to look nice and dress nice. So I had to, you know, tease him a little bit and go ahead and dress up in a tux. And Charles, okay, Jim, what would you say your role was here? Well, I'm a sales guy, but I'm also a assistant to the regional manager. Oh, you're assistant to the regional manager? And what does this come with any responsibility or any job title or rules? Well, no, it was actually a made-up job for Dwight to make Dwight feel better for a while, but then it actually became a real job that they gave to me, but I kind of more just had the title right now. And then Charles like, so does this made-up job, does it have some significance to you, Jim? Do you want to maintain that job? And right there, that's what this is. It's a made-up job that people have built for themselves in a cool kids club. Oh, man, a cool kids club of libertarians who every week, yeah, I know, super, super air quotes, please, because they have built up this position of, you know, I'm the secretary for my county LP. And it's like, great. What are you doing? Like you have the title. Now what? Well, I took the minutes and I made sure that we stuck the Robert's Rules of Order. Okay. And this is what's happened. That's become success, is maintaining our party rules and making sure that we're sticking to bylines. I'm sorry. That's not a political party. Like that's how you function to make things happen. But that's not the goal. Like that's not what the party does. The party does not exist to be meetings. Like this is one thing, and I don't mean to go after the old chairman, but like they used to say he could run a lot of good meetings. Great. I don't care. Stop worrying about running meetings. And how about like, let's start winning elections and winning local elections, getting libertarian policy into action, building collaborative efforts and coalitions with people outside of our movement and organizations that we typically wouldn't be doing that with. Also, while not trying to call other libertarians all sorts of names in the book and push people who are some of our best advocates and best mouthpieces out of the movement. It's completely destructive. It's completely backwards. And honestly, we are not in a position to be at all doing this. We should be all hands on deck. If you are ready to help get liberty in our lifetime, you're on my team. Let's roll. I'm tired of the fighting. And if you're not, and you're trying to maintain some status quo petty bullshit, get out of the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it would be like me being so proud of doing my pre-trip and filling out my logbook without getting the load anywhere on time, like kind of missing the picture. I know how to do all the technical parts, but if you're not getting the load delivered, who cares?
I see this because I talk about this in my day job. I don't mean to monopolize, but we have the engineers and the sales guys. The engineers can talk about how an SD-WAN device works to like all the specs. They can talk about every single port, and they can tell you the value of the different USB, you know, selections. And at the end of the day, that doesn't matter. What right. is it going to do? What does the product do? What problem is it solving? That's what matters. The specs don't matter. The problem it's solving matters. And the problem it's solving for the person, how is that impacting that person? That's what we need to be focusing on, not the specific product itself.
I couldn't agree more. Well, it's been great having you on, Brian. I know you got to get going, but I'll just let you plug your show or anything else that you want to mention, where people can follow you and keep up with what you're doing.
For sure. Well, hey, Reed, first and foremost, thank you for having me on the program, and thank you for the Liberty Unity approach. This has been something that has been a long time coming. You know, listening to you, Jeremy, David, I just had Trent Ortner on the program from the Redacted Caucus, who's been doing a lot of work trying to focus on getting some more Liberty Unity as well. And candidly, listening to folks out there who have been trying to raise up these issues over the past few years, know that the efforts have not gone without any real fruition coming, because now we're starting to see we're making a change. So if folks want to learn how to effectively sell the ideas of liberty to people outside of our movement, that's what my program has been focusing on recently. So we're doing 4 times a week. Every Sunday, we're doing a Sunday candidate highlight series, talking to all the different folks out there in the liberty movement, from the GOP, LP, Democratic Party, who are focusing on liberty, either policy or you know, whatever it may be, from their respective communities, and raising up their candidacies and trying to help promote them. And then Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we have our traditional show that airs every morning. But also, we just recently added a YouTube aspect to the program as well. So we're airing on Sunday nights, Tuesday nights, and Thursday nights, the video version of each program at 8 p.m. over on the Brian Nichols Show on YouTube. And we just relaunched our brand new Patreon. So if folks are interested in joining the Patreon, every single $5 sign up gets one of these fantastic Don't Hurt People and Don't Take People's Stuff bumper sticker. And also, we have a bunch of different levels as well, helping with sales, training, ebooks, all that kind of fun stuff that can be coming out on the Patreon. And then for social media, you can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Minds.com, and Parler.com at B Nichols Liberty. But Reed, again, thank you so much for what you're doing. And this is how we're going to win the future, man. These conversations, building these bridges, and talking to more folks, and helping them realize that we're not just the folks out there who like to argue online. We're actually human, and we actually care.
Yeah, at least some of us are. So, yeah, thank you for watching, everybody. If you haven't, please subscribe to the channel. Thursday, I'll be having Neocon Remover on. I'll be going on Josh Smith's show, Break the Cycle, on Sunday. Then I'll be having him on my show. And then I'll be going on Liberty Lockdown on Tuesday. And then I'll be having Tom Woods on Thursday. So stay tuned for those.